So unlike last year, I think some of the issues that need to be resolved are not necessarily as contentious or as entrenched as what we saw in 2023.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, the New York State budget is late. Well, with Easter Sunday falling on March 31st and the new fiscal year in New York State starting April 1st, we know the budget will not be on time again.
I think we're at the middle of the middle. And this may not be a surprise to you, but we are, I think as the speaker said yesterday, we are all, as he said, on the same planet, which is good.
The middle of the middle, according to New York State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart Cousins. Well, for analysis on the late budget and maybe just how late it'll be, we're joined now by Dave Lombardo, who hosts Public Radio's Capitol Press Room program. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Ian.
So is this going to be a short late budget or more like something we saw last year where it wasn't until May that we had an agreement?
So unlike last year, I think some of the issues that need to be resolved are not necessarily as contentious or as entrenched as what we saw in 2023. So my prediction coming into this Easter weekend was that we would start voting on budget bills on April 5th. And based on the budget extender language that we saw, which keeps the budget funded through April 4th, I'm feeling pretty good about that prediction, but I have a track record of being completely wrong in the past, so I wouldn't be surprised if I end up being wrong here again.
Does an April 5th budget count as a gentleman's on time?
So under the Cuomo administration, where they touted their on-time budgets, I'm pretty confident that they would have said April 5th was on time or in the vicinity. You know, they say close counts for horseshoes, hand grenades, and on-time budgets.
Just one more question about this, because, you know, we get a legislative calendar and it's printed months before the session starts. And on that calendar, we all knew that Easter was going to be on Sunday, the Sunday before April 1st, the new fiscal year. So why couldn't things get hammered out by the time lawmakers left Albany on March 28th?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, Ian, including the psyche of state lawmakers and the governor's office and this idea that you don't really need to do work until the deadlines approach. But sticking with that calendar that came out in December, there are session days scheduled for this April 2nd, 3rd, 4th, maybe even the 5th. I can't remember off the top of my head. But that was clearly a recognition of the fact that they did not expect a budget to be negotiated during the Easter weekend, and that they planned on being back here for that first week of April to actually hammer out a budget. So I think there was an agreement months ago that this was not going to be a budget wrapped up by the end of the fiscal year on March 31st.
So last year, housing was a big sticking point. The governor had this plan for 800,000 new units. That did not come together in the budget. And then late in the game, the Senate and Assembly announced their own version of a housing agreement, but it didn't have the governor on board. What about this year? Is housing still one of the big sticking points?
Housing is definitely a big sticking point, but unlike last year, the governor isn't necessarily pushing the same agenda, and it's more the stakeholders in the housing space that are driving this debate. Your listeners might remember in 2023, the governor was pushing what was considered a pretty controversial idea of requiring communities to basically embrace zoning that was maybe contrary to what local officials and the communities there were interested in doing. This year, her big push on that front was basically to incentivize zoning changes using state discretionary dollars. And most of the other housing issues she was pushing was sort of low-hanging fruit focused on New York City. Unfortunately, though, in New York, if you're going to do any sort of substantive housing stuff, you've got to consider that there are a lot of different stakeholders who all have different perspectives and all want a piece of the pie. And sometimes that pie means you have some people want savory, some people want sweet, and it takes a lot of different ingredients get thrown together for this. So you're seeing needs to balance tenant protection interests, the interests of developers, the interests of community leaders. And that's what we're seeing being negotiated behind the scenes right now. And it seems like, unlike last year, that there is more of a expectation that something will be hammered out in a final budget.
What are some of the other key issues where we can tell that the governor and the legislature are still apart?
So it's pretty clear that the legislature is not yet embracing the governor's full package to address retail theft in New York. The governor, as part of her public safety agenda, has been pretty out front on the idea that we need to do something to address the surge in retail theft, which, unlike other crime around New York that has spiked with the arrival of COVID-19, has not necessarily gone down to pre-pandemic levels. And the governor has talked about investing more in law enforcement, but she also wants to increase criminal penalties around this area. And that's something the legislature and the assembly in particular is loath to embrace. The complication here is that the governor doesn't seem like she can just walk away from this one, because she has not really been out front on any other budget issues this year. Retail theft has really been the one issue that she has prioritized. We haven't heard much from her about her budget priorities, except that she's done a handful of press conferences on this. So I think this could end up being one of the sticking points in this budget, because it's really one of the few things that she wants to get from the process.
How do you actually stop retail theft? I mean, at least what does the governor say about that?
Okay. I'm glad you're not asking me to come up with a policy. So the governor says you need to do a couple things. One, you need targeted law enforcement, coordinating from the local level to the state level to the federal level. But also you need to increase criminal penalties, including penalties on online resellers of goods, because it's not necessarily people stealing a loaf of bread to feed their family. It's
the Jean Valjean policy.
Well, you know, I didn't want to assume everyone was a big Les Mis fan like you, me, and the great Chantel Smith. But there are people who are stealing things with an intent to resell them. And the governor's hoping to crack down on some of those practices with increased criminal penalties. Whether that works, I guess we'll have to implement it and see. I think the legislature, as we've heard from Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, is more of the opinion that criminal penalties are not a deterrent for crime, and they think more about addressing some of what they describe as the roots of crime, which is often considered poverty.
What about this idea of holding harmless school districts? Education funding has become a flashpoint this year. What are the stakes?
See, this was kind of a surprise with this year's budget in light of the past two budgets under Governor Hochul, which saw record levels of increased state education aid, and something that she trumpeted and really tried to make one of her big success stories. Coming into this budget, though, there was a recognition that the state was not necessarily as fiscally well off as it has been in the past. So the governor has taken a few different steps to essentially slow the growth of school education aid. And one of those areas is this idea of hold harmless or save harmless, this provision that was written into the way we fund our public schools that essentially ensures that schools aren't going to see any significant drop in year-to-year education aid. So as the result of rolling back this proposal and making changes to the way inflation is calculated, we're seeing potentially hundreds of millions of dollars difference in what school leaders and education stakeholders had expected in the governor's budget compared to what she actually proposed. There is, though, a give and take every year with the school budgets and what the state is proposed to spend, with the natural ebb and flow being the governor proposes something, the legislature comes over the top, and then they work something out in the middle. This year, though, despite what we've heard from the budget director, Blake Washington, who's seemed to give some credence to the idea that that's the way things are actually going to play out, Governor Hochul has really tried to draw a hard line in the sand and essentially said, I'll see you in court if you think that you want to get more funding than I'm prepared to give. Maybe that's just a negotiation tactic, but there is this potential, at least rhetorically, for school aid to be a bit of a drama down the stretch. I'm skeptical that that ends up being a problem because I'm a believer that what we've seen before will be what we see in the future. So I think we end up resolving this with the state legislature securing hundreds of millions of dollars above and beyond what the governor proposed.
Yeah, there's always a little bit of wiggle room when the final number comes out. It's not going to be the original proposal in almost any case.
Yeah, and when we talk about wiggle room, that's made possible in part by the fact of a meeting of the legislature and the governor that happens during this budget process when they actually revise revenue estimates. So when the governor comes out with her budget in January, there's a projection of how much money they're going to have to spend. That number is always revised upward. This year, it was revised to $1.3 billion above and beyond what the governor proposed. So that means you've got at least $1.3 billion more to spend than what the governor proposed. So that means education, healthcare, a variety of other interests are going to be looking for a piece of that $1.3 billion. My understanding, though, is that that $1.3 billion is really the floor when it comes to how much additional revenue they're actually going to project for the coming fiscal year above and beyond what the governor has proposed. I've heard some people say that $2 billion is more likely, and it's that increased revenue projection, which I think is going to really neuter the discussion that we're seeing from some in the legislature about increasing taxes on wealthy New Yorkers and corporations. I don't see that being part of the final budget.
Okay, let's talk now about the potential fate of some of the bills that are supported by climate activists this time around. This has gotten a fair bit of attention in Albany. What are some of the highlights that you're looking at?
So the big environmental push coming from the governor this year has to do with some version of the so-called New York Heat Act, which is designed to disincentivize the use of natural gas for home heating. And there are some provisions in there that have to do with hookups for new homes, as well as subsidies for low-income ratepayers and other regulatory changes that are designed to get people onto greener energy. The governor proposed a version of the New York Heat Act. The Senate has advanced what the environmentalists would say is the pure, more aggressive version of this. The Assembly, for its part, has never moved the New York Heat Act as a standalone bill. And in their one house budget, which is supposed to espouse their priorities this budget season, they removed the language advanced by the governor. They did not include the Senate's version of this and instead made a narrative push that sort of said, we support the general principles of the New York Heat Act. But Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie has generally taken the position that he doesn't want to include policy in the state budget. So this is one of those issues that remains kind of up in the air. I think it has a good chance of being included in a final budget because from an environmental PR perspective, there's not much else that the governor can trumpet from this budget if she doesn't get the New York Heat Act, especially if she is successful in her effort to reduce the annual appropriation that goes toward clean water infrastructure. Environmentalists have gotten used to the state investing $500 million a year in this proposal. The governor in her executive budget reduced this number to $250 million. This would not be a win for the environmental movement. So I think she is looking to really throw some muscle behind the New York Heat Act, and I wouldn't be surprised if some version of it was part of a final budget.
What else are you watching to be in or out whenever we do get this budget agreement?
So the fun thing that I'm watching is what one assembly member described as the Medicaid two-step, which is an idea that was introduced by the Senate Democrats and Assembly Democrats late in this budget process to essentially tax Medicaid insurance plans. Well, Medicaid is a state program, so this would be the state basically taxing the state, and because it's a federal program, really the bill would go to the feds, and there would be a way of double dipping here to get billions of dollars beyond what we would already have expected to get from federal officials on our Medicaid budget. And this would allow for the state to spend above and beyond what the governor proposed on Medicaid. We've seen that this proposal had some traction in California, and we're using that model as the basis for our own pitch here. Whether the governor and her budget officials will go for this remains to be seen. But if some version of this is not included in a final budget, that means that healthcare spending is not going to be anywhere close to what the legislature wants. And I think that makes this a much more contentious issue, because for the most part, the problems that we're seeing negotiated here are policy issues, and this is a dollar and cents issue. And for the most part, I think there's been a consensus that the dollar and cents issues will be wrapped up pretty easily once the policy issues are done. If you don't have this additional revenue for Medicaid, though, maybe the fiscal implications become more of a challenge.
So let's wrap up with this question. Governor Hochul isn't on the ballot this year, but everybody in the legislature is. How is that looming election influencing the kinds of conversations that are happening at the Capitol right now?
So I think we need to remember that it's not just November when people are on the ballot. For some of these elected officials here in Albany, their June primaries are really what matter. And for Democrats in particular, there are concerns about primaries from their left. So there are some lawmakers who need to see victories on progressive wish list items, or they could see themselves being the target of much more aggressive campaigns in June. Conversely, though, there are what we consider marginal members. There are people who represent so-called purple districts, often Democrats. And in these cases, those Democrats are worried about a budget that goes too far to the left. So it's those competing interests that the Assembly Speaker, the Senate Majority Leader, and the governor are trying to navigate, trying to hit that sweet spot, so to say, so that everyone has something that they can tout during their contentious election, whether that's a primary or a general, and so that they also aren't running from certain issues, that there aren't things that are dogging them during their campaign. So that, I think, is what's going to highlight a lot of this debate for the state lawmakers. The people who could catch some strays, though, from this budget are candidates for Congress, because if you're a Democrat running, whether it's in the Hudson Valley or Central New York or on Long Island for a contested seat, you might get tied with things that happen out of Albany, even if you had nothing to do with it, for good or for ill. So that's the way this could impact elections up and down the ballot come June and November.
So I think things were pretty bruising last year, obviously. Do you expect that we'll get a kumbaya, Hochul, Hasty, Stuart Cousins, happy press conference at the end of this budget, whenever that is?
I think the kumbaya era has evaporated here in Albany. I think there was a lot of goodwill for Governor Hochul when she took office in the fall of 2021. And I think a lot of that goodwill has evaporated, especially I think Assembly Speaker Carl Hasty in particular is loath to do a lot of media availabilities, in part because he doesn't want to answer questions about his own potential conflict of interest that have been brought to light by reporting from New York Focused about his relationship with a lobbyist. So I would be shocked to see the three big players in the room sharing that room with the media anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see what happens with Hasty. I mean, he said he'll never talk about his personal life again, which is, I mean, it's tough for someone who's up in front of reporters pretty often.
Yeah, I think he might be able to get away with it to a certain degree, though, because the press corps that exists at the Capitol today is a lot different than the one 10, 20, 30 years ago, when I have to imagine would have doggedly been following the speaker about this issue. I could imagine the New York Post's keeping someone outside of the speaker's home on a regular basis. But there seems to be more of an acceptance when it comes to something like this. And to date, all of the good breaking stories about the speaker and his potential conflict of interest have just come from one outlet. So I think at a certain point, he may be able to walk away from this issue and not get dogged by questions.
Yeah. And one more thing on that. I mean, you might be right that he can just stop talking about it and then it'll go away. But I wonder if there's something to be said for just doing a press conference and talking about it for 5 minutes, saying, hey, here's how we're avoiding any problems. And I'd ask you to keep my private life private. And thank you so much. And then it would be over anyway.
Well, now we're talking like we're on the media project, Ian, which I'm ready to join whenever you want. But I think you're proposal there comes from our background as journalists and this idea that there should be transparency and discuss things and just rip off the Band-Aid and get over with. But there really is no requirement from the speaker to do that. He can do his job and he can be successful as a leader without taking questions. There's no penalty for him politically or really personally from not addressing this in the media. And we've seen that more broadly with the Assembly Democrats over many years. They are not very forthcoming with the media. They will ignore press requests. They will ignore questions often because there is no penalty for them for doing that. Voters aren't going to the polls in November and saying, well, those Assembly Democrats aren't very transparent, going to have to give the Assembly Republicans a chance to run the chamber. So without any sort of penalty for lack of disclosure on this or other issues, I would be shocked to see the Assembly Democrats make any changes in how they handle the media.
Well, Dave Lombardo, we're so grateful that you are accessible. Thank you for coming on to give us this budget update. And you can hear Dave on the Capitol Press Room, which is produced by WCNY. We really appreciate all your time.
Been my pleasure, Ian.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.